time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
You need to get Urban Meyer to invent, my old granddad was from Kearney. I always wanted to coach the Huskers. That was the program I always dreamed of, not Ohio State. It's the only program I'd leave the booth for now.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
It is a good story, how it all came about and everything. But man, the honeymoon is over, right? Like, it's just, it is over. And the thing is I don't know that it's going to get better in the short term.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Pandemic aside, he's an 8-4 coach. And if this isn't the beginning of an 8-4 season, I don't know what is. Because you're 1-1 after Sam Houston and Appalachian State. And here comes Miami, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and Alabama, your next four games. All of them are undefeated right now.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod, gentlemen. First firing of the year is already here. Not even mid-September.
No, we have not. It is September 10th, or maybe he waited to the 11th for the actual firing. Scott Frost, pour one out for the pride of Wood River, Nebraska. You shouldn't have been brought back if you're going to fire a dude three games in.
Just colossal.
It was stupid then. It was stupid when he got a contract extension after his second year. This was just not good for Nebraska all around. We have discussed Scott Frost many times on this pod. It seemed like it was going to be great. I don't know how you go 13-0 at UCF 2 years after they won zero games under George O'Leary, right? They were winless. Takes over UCF, goes 6-7, 13-0, and then since he is 16-31.
It's incredible.
Nothing worked at Nebraska for Scott Frost except the bank teller.
Yeah. Direct deposit was his only victory.
What did he get? $15 million?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think almost 16 million
plus whatever he got, you know, while he was actually on the job.
Yeah. $15 million just to go away. What a country. Mm-hmm. Absolute disaster. I mean, they lose to Georgia Southern. Although, you know, at some point, losing to the Sun Belt can't be fireable offense, or we're going to have no coaches left.
That's right.
Yeah, we'll get to that. The rise of the Sun Belt.
The mighty, mighty Sun Belt.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Hustle Belt, baby. No, that's the Mac, I think.
Clay Helton, coach killer.
Yeah. Clay Helton knows a thing or two about early firing.
Yeah, just a year ago, killed by other coaches. Now here he is.
Yeah. The Sun Belt East is going to be, I don't know what they call themselves. Do they call themselves East, or is it like Group A?
No, it's East and West.
East. Coastal, Georgia Southern, James Massmart. I mean, we're going to get to it. Sun Belt on the week.
Yep.
Anyway, Frost had to go. They never should have brought him back. I feel bad for the players on the current team who, once again, had a season. You know, their season gets destroyed and burned. These guys have finite seasons and careers, and for whatever reason, we just throw them out the window. So hopefully Nebraska can still have a rewarding season, whether they win games or not. But Scott Frost is gone. So here is the question. I will start with you, Pat. Who do they hire, and what the hell do they got to do to get Nebraska back? And they ain't going to be Tom Osborne era, but back to, you know, whatever is deemed back at Nebraska. Who and what do they need?
Well, first of all, I'm a little bit sad. These are our last swings at the Scott Frost pinata. My gosh, it has been a large, fat, slow-moving target for years now. It was nice of Nebraska to bring him back for this last season that everybody on earth who had a rational thought said in November, oh, that's a bad idea, bringing him back. And then it was like, well, they're going to save some money. Oh, okay. There you go. Good. And then you ruin one more season and you turn it into a complete tumult. He hasn't beaten an FBS team since, I don't know when. But so who do you hire? I put four names in the 40-yard dash. I think there are three within the Big 12 who are in the area, who are very good coaches, who overachieve at limited programs to a degree, recruit the same area, play a Nebraska style of football, and could all succeed there. Matt Campbell at Iowa State, Lance Leipold at Kansas, Chris Kleeman at Kansas State. A lot of people say, all right, Nebraska's not an A-list job, and it's not really anymore. It's not, but it's probably still a better job than those three. They care deeply about football. You have a huge, passionate fan base, more passionate than any of those three. And if you look at the rosters of those three teams, Iowa State, Kansas State, man, they recruit the same areas. It's Illinois, it's Iowa, it's Nebraska, it's Missouri, it's Colorado. You get into Wisconsin, around the Midwest. You can maybe go into Ohio for some, maybe into Michigan for some, and then you go to Texas. And that's where they built their rosters. So I think all three of those guys would be willing to listen, probably because the Big 12 is still a bit shaky, all right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's going to survive, but if you've got a chance to go to the Big 10, which you know is going to survive there, and you're going into the Big 10 West, which stinks on ice at the moment, and generally speaking is not overwhelming, you got a chance to go in, compete to win your division at a place where they will care a lot about what you're doing, and you got a shot there. So, no, you're not going to go 11-1, 12-0, 13-0. You're not going to win national championships anymore, but you can win more than you lose. The fourth name I threw out, and then I'll turn this back over, was Mark Stoops from Kentucky. Want to go to a football school, or you want to be at a basketball school? You want John Calipari to decide what your school is about, or do you want to go to a place where it's 100% a football university? Yeah, I mean, if he's bothered by that, and he sure seemed bothered by that, you could go, get a hero's welcome, get out of the SEC meat grinder. At least you're not beating your head against Georgia in your division. You're trying to beat, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota. That's doable, theoretically. So one of those four, if you get one of those four, if you're Nebraska, I think you'd walk out feeling like you did pretty well.
Mark Stoops coming off a 10-point road win at the Swamp against the number 12 team in the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking good. Yeah, I know.
Seems like it's going all right.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if I were him that I would make that move. But Pat's right, though. If he's as frustrated with the whole football basketball school thing, well, then I guess it's an easy decision. But Mark Stoops' name has been out there, buzzing the last couple years for some big high-profile jobs. Bigger, I would say, than the Nebraska job. Like, LSU's job last year, his name was kind of around quite a bit. That's an interesting one. I think Pat's point is well taken with as far as getting into the Big Ten in also the SEC for that matter. Talking to some coaches this past cycle, one of them said to me, there are going to be two things that you're going to see change how coaches move jobs. One is, a determining factor would be NIL. Like, how is your NIL? How are your collectives? What kind of NIL system do you have? And the other thing is, are you in one of the two conferences? Are you in the Big Ten? Are you in the SEC? So those two things might, usually we think of coaching decisions and determining coaching, coaches and how they move on like recruiting footprint and of course money for salary and salary pool and all that still does matter. But it's interesting that maybe NIL and the actual conference alignment is going to come into play. And Nebraska has pretty much all those things except a really good recruiting footprint, right? They probably have great resources. They're willing to spend the resources. They're in the Big Ten. They're in that conference. And, and again, none of these figures are real, confirmed. But what I've heard is they got $10-plus million at least pledged for NIL, if not more than that, much more than that. So they've got a lot to sell. There's no doubt about it, except you got to get on a plane to recruit. Right. I mean, that's the big, I guess, drawback there is that you've got to get on a plane to recruit. By the way, Pat, October 2nd, 2021 was Nebraska's last FBS win, almost a year, a full year. That was Northwestern, by the way. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Man.
All right, a couple things. Pat's list is good. Good list. Obviously, you could go that route. I think they got rid of Frost this quickly. Right now, you know, I've said this before, like the Nebraska program is just the fans at this point.
Yeah, that's what's left.
There isn't really a program. There's no team. They show up for each other. They're unbelievably loyal. They have nothing but each other.
That's true.
How do you show up for a year and lose every game?
Right.
Okay. They show up in huge numbers and they tailgate and they support the team and they follow the team and they want the team to win, and there's no team. It doesn't exist. You can't be the schools that are this bad don't care about football. Like, you can't keep winning three games. You're just like, well, we don't care. We're Kansas. We have a basketball team that we care about, or we're Duke, or we're Northwest. We can't, you know, we're Vanderbilt. What do you want us to do? We got smart kids here. You know, if you've seen our law school rankings, Nebraska is, it's like they just are each other. And that's why I think they had to fire him, because their biggest thing they have going for them right now is the sellout streak.
Yeah.
And they've got the first three games sold out. And I think they're looking later in the year. Like, if we don't fire him now, the fans will try to revolt by not cutting. We'll lose the streak. It's been every home game since 1962.
It's incredible.
Remarkable.
So they had to do it because they got to protect their streak.
Yeah.
And this is both the curse and the beauty of Nebraska, right? The curse is you're constantly looking backwards.
Yeah, right.
And that light at the end of the tunnel keeps getting further away. It's not happening, but you need the coach, and I don't know who it is, but I want the coach to then take everything that Ross is talking about and saying, "This, I am this guy. We are going to damn pay our players. we're straight up, like, whatever. And I, the coldest, he's going to do a little commercial. No, we're going to pay guys. We're going to pay the transfers. We're going to pay the recruits. We're going to do every single thing, because when Nebraska was great, they got recruits from all over the country, because it was back in the 60s and 70s. TV did not matter. Even into the 80s, TV money mattered a lot less. Budgets were based on how many tickets you sold, how many T-shirts you sold. And Nebraska had all the money. They had more money than all these schools. There's a reason Missouri and Iowa State and the Kansas schools, they don't care about football, because Nebraska kicked all their asses. Yeah. They had all the money. They had all the fans. Nebraska's got fans and they've got money. And so they need to take the program and invest it. And they're in the wrong league. They were better in the Big 12. They seemed a lot cooler. They had access to Texas. They used to get some kids from California. Now, again, they're just another tradition school with a big, huge stadium in the Midwest and the Big Ten. And they got to go. We'll get guys out of Chicago and Detroit and Cleveland. No, you won't, because those kids got to drive by seven schools that are just like you to get to you, to even visit. So what do you do? What solves geography? Money. And they've got the money. They have to be uber aggressive. I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I re-listened to Scott Frost's initial press conference. And, you know, it was a hero's welcome. Hey, I thought it would work. I thought, here's a guy with a bunch of Florida contacts. They'll get some players. They've got to get talent. I mean, they didn't just lose to Georgia Southern. They got beat.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia Southern just went up and down the field the entire game.
Yeah, this was five interceptions and the ball slipped out of the holder. You know, this was a beating.
Yeah.
Northwestern pushed them around. They haven't won in a year.
Yeah.
And look what happened with Northwestern.
Yeah, right.
Northwestern
bumped by Duke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Duke beats the hell out of Northwestern. So this is a bad football team with not good enough players. But you take the money and you can't do. So I'm listening to Scott Frost, and it's a lot of like bringing back the tradition. I know what this is about. Like, one of the early questions in the press conference was the importance of the walk-on program we got at Nebraska, which is like, you know, it's this great. Oh, we always found these little these kids from these corn towns, and they'd come in, and that was the one who blocked the kick against the Sooners in 77 or something. Right.
The kid from Ogallala.
You cannot. That ain't how it works anymore. Not how it worked then.
Yeah. No.
Either. But it's this like mystic, oh, I understand the pro. Now, I need someone who's coming in saying, I am going to take the enormous resources we have here, and we're going modern all the way. Unapologetic.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to outspend everybody we can because we have to. The only way we're getting kids to come here is if we outspend it. That's how this game is going to get played in the future. And Nebraska has the bank account to do that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, a name that's been already out there, I don't think it's one you mentioned, Pat, but it's intriguing, is Matt Rhule. If it doesn't work out with the Carolina Panthers, I think it's clear that, you know, he would be okay with returning to college. Cause I mean, everybody seems to be putting out his name for the last year. Remember last coaching cycle. And I've heard myself just in the right agent industry that he's made it known, or at least people close to him have made it known, that he'd be willing to come back to college if it doesn't work out in the pros. And, you know, I remember sitting down with him back in maybe 2019 at Baylor, I think it was. And I remember thinking, man, this guy, like, he's a college coach. Like, just the way he, you know, just the way he talks and the way he acts. And then I was actually kind of surprised, you know, to see him leave and go to the pros, thinking that, man, he just, like, felt so college. So that would be, I think that he probably could get a better job than Nebraska, but if that's the only one, if that's the one that the biggest one that opens, you know, this year, because this is supposed to be a slower cycle. You know, we always say that, but last year it was wild. That. Last year it was so wild that there is the expectation that it'll be a little slower this year. So arguably, you know, Nebraska might be the best job open outside of Auburn. You know, and maybe some people might say it's a better job than Auburn. I don't know. I wouldn't be one of those people, but. Rhule is an interesting one, and I think would do what Dan is talking about, where he's gonna do whatever and push whatever buttons and use whatever that he needs to do to win and to get players and to be a relentless recruiter.
I that's an interesting name, and Carolina did lose their opener today while we're taping this, so you know, You, if that thing starts going sideways, it wouldn't be surprised at all if he's sending out feelers like, you know, hey, bring me back. I do have to ask one thing here, guys. Okay, so was 2017 like the one-hit wonder of all one-hit wonders when he went undefeated at UCF, or what the hell happened? How did they do it? How did they go undefeated at UCF?
They had players.
They had McKenzie. I'm like, is McKenzie Milton the key to everything? You know,
McKenzie Milton made him like $35 million.
Yeah,
if not more.
Yep.
I mean, is this like, you know, Scott Frost wrote the Macarena or something like that? Like, you know,
yeah, right.
I think those guys. Those guys were big one-hit wonders.
It did. It does probably show that. That team, you know, was a pretty dang good football team that had pretty good players. I mean, it probably kind of shows that. And I think we talked about this on the pod, maybe one of the many times that we were discussing Scott Frost. And we talked about Florida's coaching search. Like, I always go back to that crazy coaching search with Chip Kelly, and how, you know, if Scott Frost was all in, and I'm pretty sure Florida would have hired him. And somebody at Florida once told me, you know, something like, you know, thankfully he wasn't all aboard, you know, and he didn't want to go to Gainesville, because clearly, you know, it probably wouldn't have worked out. And it's crazy. And it just proves how much of a crapshoot that coaching searches are. And we talked about this before too, I know, but like Scott Frost to Nebraska, Tom Herman to Texas, like, some of these moves just made perfect sense and felt like a home run hire.
And Dan Mullen to Florida. Yeah, all four of those made perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thought they were all really good.
We know nothing. That's the
point. And then you take guys who are completely unknown assistants, and they become, right, like Lincoln Riley and Ryan Day.
Sam freaking Pittman right now.
Sam Pittman Dabo. Sitting around. Yeah, all of those schools should have hired Sam Pittman.
Eddie O. Shoot. I mean, you want to list at least won a national championship.
It is a hard, hard thing picking a coach. So it's going to be on Nebraska. I just think you need someone with a very, very modern take, because the old days are gone. That, or you need to get Urban Meyer to invent, you know, my old granddad was from Kearney. Always wanted to coach the Huskers.
That's really the program I dreamt of.
That was the program I always dreamed of, not Ohio State. Yeah, it's the only program I'd leave the booth for now. Yeah. We used to sit on his front porch, watch the soybean grow. listen to old Husker games on the radio.
Listen to Johnny Rogers returning punts on the radio. Yeah.
Husker fans right now are like, dude, you can dance. You can dirty dance with whatever patron you want.
That's right.
You don't have to fly home with the team. We don't care. We take Bo Pelini back now, man.
I know. Go look at Bo Pelini's. Right. I think there's a wild stat of, you know, when you go look at Bo Pelini's record, I think Scott Frost already has the same amount of more losses than Bo Pelini did his entire career. Scott's what, 5 years? Is it five seasons? Not even five. Yeah. Right.
Four plus three.
Four and some change. And he's got more losses than Bo did in what, nine years? 8 years?
Something. The stat I saw that was phenomenal was that Frost could win his next 50 straight games and his record would still be worse than Bo Pelini's. Like, oh my. Yeah.
All right. Well, plenty more on the coaching search at Nebraska. All right. Further meltdowns.
So many meltdowns. God,
all right. Let's go by order. By the AP rankings.
Yeah.
Marshall, 26. Notre Dame, 21. Marcus Freeman, 0-2 on the season, 0-3 as a head coach. Alarm bells running off there in South Bend. Again, another not really an upset if you watch the game.
Right.
Marshall was ready to roll. Charles Huff, terrific coach. Came from Nick Saban's system. His team is ready to go. Charles Huff. Not going to be in Huntington too long with stuff like this.
No kidding.
So he has done an incredible job with that program, and they went in and just beat Notre Dame up. So all credit to the Marshall players in that. However, Marcus Freeman, he can recruit. He is personable. He's exciting. He's cool. College football could use guys that are just sort of like, this guy's like a cool dude. We need a cool factor here. He's it. I think most people are rooting for Marcus Freeman to be of some measure of success, even though he coaches freaking Notre Dame, which normally everyone hates. But you gotta win. And as we said many times, I think I said last week, Brian Kelly, not real likable, but he didn't lose games that he wasn't supposed to lose. And there is something to be said about that. They always won. They may not have beaten the teams they couldn't beat. They always beat the teams they could, especially lately. So this was a terrible result for Marcus Freeman. He has an enormous amount still to prove. And I don't know where this season is going. They do not have a good offense. Not good by Tommy Griester, offensive coordinator. Not good by Tyler Buchner, their quarterback. All around bad. And, yeah, you got a recruiting class now, but – You know, you got to win to keep the recruiting class. Notre Dame's a little less flippable than most places because kids are not just going there. They're going there for a little bit more than just wins and losses, but still, you got to prove it. So, thoughts on that, Ross?
Marcus Freeman, he rocks the quarter zip on the sideline better than any other coach in America. But, But it doesn't lead to wins, though, unfortunately.
No points.
Yeah,
no
appearances,
points for that.
The appearances don't get you there. the off season of Marcus Freeman Love has really been incredible, right? Like, and Notre Dame has pushed it. Like, you could tell, like, it they've pushed it. There have been so many stories about it, and it was it is a good story how it all came about and everything. But man, the honeymoon is over, right? Like, it's just, it is over. And the thing is I don't know that it's going to get better in the short term. First of all, they don't seem to have a quarterback that can move the football very well, an offense in general that can move the football very well. And they play, they go to UNC, North Carolina, who just, by the way, beat two Sun Belt teams barely, but that looks pretty dang good right now. I mean, it's the power conference.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah. Right. They look pretty. Yeah. So Notre Dame's got to go to UNC, to UNC in a couple weeks. They got to go to BYU. They host Clemson, right? And then they host
BYU's in Vegas.
USC.
BYU's in Vegas.
Vegas. And then USC and Clemson. I mean, you can see a 7-5 or 6-6, like barely. And they got to go. They do have to play at Syracuse, who suddenly has come to life. So, oh boy, this could be an interesting first season up there.
Yeah, if you look at everything, 0-3, first of all, nobody's ever been 0-3 as a coach at Notre Dame. Not Jerry Faust, not Charlie Weiss. So Marcus Freeman is making bad history there. You can look at it and say, okay, it was a fire drill taking over, thrown into a bowl game against a good opponent in Oklahoma State. You blow a 21-point lead, but still, okay, no worries. You go to Ohio bowl State. Game. Ohio State's loaded. You play a pretty good game. You're in the game at least. Okay, fine. You come home and lose to Marshall? No, not fine. Not okay. Not good. Quite bad. Those are the kind of games Notre Dame does not lose. They didn't even used to schedule them. And now they schedule it and you lose. And, I mean, yes, it was what it looked like to me was the classic thing coaches talk about. Coaching 101. Don't let Ohio State beat you twice. And Ohio State beat them twice. They didn't get over that game. They weren't mentally prepared to play this game. They weren't physically prepared. They weren't coached up well enough. Marshall was better. They were more prepared. They were more excited. They were better coached. All those things. That's on Marcus Freeman. Hey, you're 36 years old. It's not easy, but you got the job at Notre Dame. Nobody's expecting it to be easy. You got to perform. That was an incredibly bad performance. And you go back and you think how quickly Notre Dame hired Freeman. And I really think they were so angry, shocked, bitter at Brian Kelly that this was, your spouse just walked out on you. How fast can you get another hot date and start putting pictures up of you having fun with your new hot date? Yeah. We're over you. We're past it. Fine. No, we can move on. We're good. We got Marcus Freeman right here in the building and the players like him and blah, 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 blah. And look at this great video of the players and him. Okay, fine. Still got a coach. Got to win some games. If they had waited till January, they might have been able to get Luke Fickell. Even if they didn't want to wait, they could have talked to PJ Fleck. They could have talked to Matt Campbell. They could have had some very, very attractive established candidates. I'm not saying Marcus Freeman's a failure. I'm not saying it's a bad hire, but this is a bad start. And they look to me like a team. The same problem against Ohio State was the problem. They got worn down and beat up at the end of the game. But this is Marshall beating them up. This is Marshall just shoving it down their throat at the end. And Notre Dame like, oh, no, what do we do? Wow, that's bad.
Kalen LeBourne, 163 yards rushing for Marshall. And he's just grinding him out. And that was it, 31 carries. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no secret what was happening.
No.
Here he comes. Stop them, and they couldn't. I had a big long run at TD. Look, I don't – that was problematic. The lack of energy, the end of the game, they actually were trying to score in the last minute. They still had the game at a chance and just didn't – they got huge problems on offense. That, to me, is the story.
Yeah.
Tyler Buchner, 18 of 32, 201 yards, two picks. This kid is not ready to play. Mm-hmm. Drew Pine. He's a backup.
Yeah.
They need CJ Carr to redesignate to senior year.
I tell you,
they need to maybe revisit Dante Moore. Be like, hey,
yeah,
maybe What do we got to do here?
Yeah, that throne of gold we had you pose on, you can actually just have it as opposed to
get the gold. Here you have it. We'll reconstruct an even larger one in Detroit for you. I don't know what you got. I mean, they don't have a quarterback. And if you don't have a quarterback, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And Tommy Rees is, you know, this is, you want to believe all this stuff. I don't know. I mean, it's way early to say this is a bad hire, but this was a bad week. And this is not the start necessarily you want. No. How they respond against Cal. If that offensive line, which is really, I mean, they got a ton of good players. If they don't blow Cal off the, but they should have done this last week, right? I don't think they played angry. I think they played entitled.
Yeah. Hmm.
And didn't respect Marshall. And Marshall, these kids came in and got it done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. This is bad. It's way too early. You can lose.
It's the overreaction podcast, man. This is what you get.
It's the overreaction pod. I hate to kill a guy, 36-year-old's career.
I know. No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
He's 36. Yeah. We'll see.
Not saying it's a bad hire, but it's a bad start.
Not trending in the right direction here.
There is a third option at quarterback. Steve Angeli, a freshman. He was a four-star guy. He was in for spring. He played in the spring game. I was there. He led a two-minute drill drive to like either win or tie the spring game. You know, who knows? It's a spring game. But like, if the options are Tyler Buchner and Drew Pine, you better at least explore the third option. It may take him till you got a bye week between North Carolina and BYU. Maybe you can get a guy up to speed by then. But
this was force. I mean, Henry Columbi, 145 yards passing. I mean, Marshall ran it 50 times.
Yeah. Marshall controlled the ball.
One guy with 31.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Tough down there in Huntington. Tough down there in Huntington. All right, next one.
Yeah.
Marcus Freeman's like, go talk about the guy who's this guy's had years.
A lot of tire fires to put out here.
Two contracts. I'm only two games. Jimbo Fisher's two contracts. What is the thing? What about ism? What about this guy? No excuses at A&M. They lose 17-14 to Appalachian State, who gave up 63 to North Carolina.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The North Carolina offense is apparently the Kansas City Chiefs offense. They scored 14 against Appalachian State at home in a 173 degrees day. Absolute debacle. In some ways, this was worse because you could see once Appalachian State started playing well, and again, running the ball, 52 times they ran on them. These are not tricks. Remember, they tricked Michigan with, like, the spread offense, and Michigan had never seen it, and they just kind of, the 15 year ago, the great Appalachian State upset. This was just like, we're tougher than you.
Yeah.
We're tougher than you. We're going to run it 52 times. And we're just going to grind this out. And Hayes King and these guys, you got all these guys? No, not going to happen. Three and outs. I don't know what their total plays were, but very low on Texas A&M.
They didn't crack 100 yards, I don't think, passing or rushing, I believe. They were held under 100 yards.
97 yards passing, 89 rushing. Only two players rushed. Devon Acme, is that it? Or Kane, how do you say his name?
Oh, Devon.
Whatever, Devon. Yeah. He doesn't want to know. Don't mention me. Not my fault. Haynes King. That's it. They never got any plays.
No.
20 passing attempts, 18 rushes. That's 18 offensive plays.
It's just incredible.
Or 38 offensive plays I can add.
Yep. Nine first downs.
38. How are you going to win?
Nine first downs. Nine.
Marshall ran it 52 and threw it 30. That's 82. This is the craziest game. They didn't. This was bad. So, I mean, they got the recruits, but what is wrong, Pat?
Yeah, look, this to me is worse than what's the Marcus Freeman situation at Notre Dame. Because as you said, this is year six for Jimbo. No, year five for Jimbo. He's been extended. His buyout's in the $90 million range. And he's, pandemic aside, he's an 8-4 coach. And if this isn't the beginning of an 8-4 season, I don't know what is. Because you're 1-1 after Sam Houston and Appalachian State. And here comes Miami, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and Alabama, your next four games. All of them are undefeated right now.
Oof.
Good luck.
He needs another ranch to rest on. He needs another ranch.
He's got two.
He only has two. What is two ranches? He needs a third ranch. Yep. That's the problem.
Or a rant, R-A-N-T, about Nick Saban. Let's have that. Right? I saw somebody playing that showed more, on repeat that's Saturday.
It showed more fight. It showed more fight in that.
That's the right. only time we've seen any zest out of anything related to Jimbo Fisher this year.
Somebody tell Jimbo that who they playing next? Who they got?
They got Miami.
Miami.
Let's go Miami. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mario has been saying you're buying players. You fired up and actually come up with a game plan that you don't run 38 snaps.
Hey, look out.
That's like, I mean, that's like a powder puff game. How do you run 38? How do you have 38 snaps?
What a great game. I mean, honestly, what a great game plan by App State. Also, did you got, you know, game day's going to Boone, North Carolina, which App State blew up game day's plans. Pretty certain they were going to College Station for Miami.
Oh, yeah, they were.
In
so
A&M.
Was I.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not anymore.
That's right. And so now they're going to App. And the stuff from Boone was incredible. It made my heart warm. Just great, like, videos of the celebration in downtown Boone, like shirtless people running and hugging each other, jumping into a pond, shooting flares into the air in downtown. It was amazing. It was amazing. Love college football.
Those mountain guys got weapons at any moment. Any moment.
It is incredible.
Always
but
ready.
This the game was amazing.
Hey, I
was
time to break out the bazooka fireworks. Hell yeah, I've been saving this since we beat the Wolverines in 07.
But what a great game plan by Sean Clark and them just to, like, hog the ball as long as they can. I think they had the ball for over, like, 42 minutes. It was insane.
That is not a good game plan. You can't grind the clock and run it every time against an SEC.
You're not supposed to. Yeah,
line.
You're not supposed to.
It's supposed to have. Yeah. They're supposed to have 17 first-round picks on the defensive line. Hey, what we're going to do, we're going to run it on them.
Yeah.
That's the dumbest idea I've ever seen.
Hey, speaking of defensive coordinator, former A&M defensive coordinator, Mike Elko, first year at Duke. Yeah. Boy, they're missing him, obviously. And it's not, and I should say, A&M's biggest issue isn't the defense, although they struggled. Yeah, I mean, that's not the biggest issue. Right now, they're having offensive issues, and they had offensive issues the first game against Sam Houston. Like it was really slow to start. I think they ended up scoring like 30 points. It was just, you know, rough. So I wonder, is Jimbo gonna make they had a pretty intense quarterback battle. I got a call Sunday morning from former LSU staffer who knows Max Johnson pretty well, the quarterback who's been riding the bench for A&M, and wondering, you know, we're kind of asking, like, what's Jimbo doing? Why isn't Max playing? The kid is really talented. So be interested to see if there's a change there.
I think there almost has to be because, A&M is so deadly serious about trying to win and has tried so hard to money whip the sport that you just can't sit there and say, yeah, we're just going to keep rocking with Haynes King after scoring 14 points and throwing for 90-some yards against Appalachian State. So you've got to try something different because the urgency demands it. And how could Max Johnson be less effective or less productive than that? Right now, Texas A&M last in the SEC by a wide margin in 10-plus yards or longer plays, long scrimmage plays so far. They got nothing, no explosion offensively, no vertical. They got nothing right now offensively. And Jimbo Fisher was an offensive guy. He's always been that way. He better come up with something. $90 million is a lot to buy out, even for Texas A&M, unless you get an oil tycoon to step up and say, I got this. He's going to be your guy.
In the talent discrepancy between these two teams, this is from Sam Kahn with The Athletic. Texas A&M signed more five-star recruits in 2022, a single year, signed 8, than App State has signed top 1,000 recruits in the last 4 years. So A&M in 1 year signed 8 5-stars. App State hasn't signed 8 top 1,000 recruits in the last 4 years. It's just mind-blowing.
That is incredible.
I love these games in the Sun Belt. It's fantastic. And this is why I'm excited the playoff is going to honor these programs because they're going to still have a chance to compete.
Yep.
They have a path, and I'm not saying they're going to win the national title, but these are schools that care about football. They just weren't big schools 100 years ago.
Yeah.
We're not mentioning Coastal Carolina this week, but we can mention them, any of these ones.
Louisiana,
they care about football.
Yeah,
they care. They just weren't, that part of the state of South Carolina wasn't a big deal then. Now it is. Now they're building up all over there. Like, so they have a shot, and these guys can come in and play. And I love a game, whether it was Marshall, whether it was any of these, we'll get to some of the others, where every kid on the team had the other school offered. Like, you could have recruited every kid on their team.
Yeah.
Every single player on Marshall and on Appalachian State would have gone to either Notre Dame or Texas A&M.
Sure.
Some of them as walk-ons.
Yeah.
Right.
Preferred walk-ons. Yeah. I'd be like, I'll take my shot. What the hell? And you went in there and beat them, and you beat them in the trenches.
Yep.
Crazy.
Well, that's a good point about the playoff too, Dan. Just like really quickly, like right now, you know, if it had already expanded, we'd be talking about these teams as, you know, juicy 11, 12 seeds, you know, could upset in the first round. And App State would be one of them, would be a team that would be excited about that. Hey, they could take down the 5 seed or the 6 seed, you know?
Well, how about what seed do you get coming out of the Sun Belt?
Yeah.
Coastal, Georgia Southern, James Madison, Marshall, Louisiana, and South Alabama are all undefeated.
Right.
App State has a loss, this crazy loss. They almost beat Carolina. And, these are the beauty of that playoff with 12 is they don't have to go play Alabama.
Right.
They're going to play a somewhat flawed, team that's fifth, sixth. But you sit there and say, hey, what if one of these guys runs the table out of here? I mean, talk about picking up great non-conference wins that should give respect. All of a sudden, you might be a top 8 seed. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they should get credit for beating each other.
Yep.
They should. That'll be interesting to see if that does happen. I think we probably know whether it won't.
But yeah.
But these could be quality, interesting games. I mean, you're looking at Marshall has Coastal Carolina on October 29th. They got Louisiana on October 12th, Coastal on October 29th, App on November 12th. I mean, I'm going to be watching. Those are going to be good games.
Maybe the Sun Belt gets 2 in.
What league is going to have better wins?
Right. That's the thing.
You know, right? I mean, we'll see whether A&M and the Irish just fall off.
Right.
But who's got better? How are you going to get a better win than at A&M?
Right.
That's great. If they could still go 10-2 or something like that. No, I think it's that. And here's the thing. The transfer portal. It goes up and down. And everyone talks, oh, my God, they're rating. This guy was a star and now he's going up. But someone's drifting down that we don't know about, so it doesn't get any hype.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be a quarterback or running back. It's like, oh, that linebacker's really good. He's been to 3 schools.
Yep.
So maybe this flattens it out a little bit, which is what we're all hoping for, because this is more interesting. Obviously not that. All right, let's get to this one. Wisconsin, Big 12 West had a dreadful weekend.
Total tire fire other than Minnesota. Total.
Yeah, who's played nobody. But the whole thing is just not good out there. Washington State rolls into Madison, Wisconsin, wins 17-14. Again, anemic offense. You know, Wisconsin looks – the Graham Mertz experiment that looked so good a few years ago, they're not putting up big points. Great win for the Cougars. Fly that flag at game day every week. What's the panic level in Madison, Pat?
It's got to be pretty high because last year was so disappointing. You know, I mean, the fact is they really should be the best program in the Big Ten West. And last year they gave that away. The year before that it was Northwestern. So it's been Northwestern. It's been Iowa. The general thought, oh, well, it's Wisconsin's turn to get back up there. Not the way they've started, other than the fact that Iowa looks even worse and Northwestern doesn't look very good either. But the offense, if you're a Wisconsin fan, you got to be tired of this, of just this inability to put the ball in the end zone, to make big plays. And this game was a little bit weird. Like they moved the ball decently and they just screwed up. They had 100 yards in penalties. They missed 2 field goals. But still, the bottom line is 14 points. That's not good enough. And Washington State is getting better, I think. But that's a game you can't lose if you're Wisconsin and you want to be thought of the way you should. And so, you know, the Paul Chryst look, you know how these folks are at Wisconsin. He's one of their guys. You know, he's not quite, he doesn't have Kirk Ferentz cachet, but he's got a lot of cachet. But eventually you got to be sitting there saying, when are we going to get back to being good? Because they're not.
Well, doesn't Wisconsin just kind of historically, a little bit at least, remind you of like a better version of Iowa? You know, they're like always right. A little better. They're like a little better version of Iowa. And at some point, maybe they're drifting to Iowa levels. Of course, Iowa isn't even at Iowa levels right now. So, no. but it does feel like the offensive struggles are finally coming to like hurt them in the win column. And how about Jake Dickert of Washington State? First year,
yeah,
right?
Really, you know,
first game. Or second game, you know, pretty incredible.
First big one. Yeah. No, huge win for Washington. They look great. Great win for the Pac-12.
Yes.
Great win. Go into Wisconsin and win. Briefly on this, because we amazingly have not gotten to Texas Alabama yet. Iowa, obviously, just absolutely dreadful offensive performance. Iowa State wins the Children of the Corn game. Illinois did carry that Big Ten West banner with a nice 24-3 win with Virginia. So, maybe they're the thing there. All right, Ross, you were there in Austin. Did you get heat stroke? What happened? A wild game. Texas is back, baby, by losing, and Quinn Ewers is hurt. Ewers looked terrific. Remember on the preview show, on our picks were awful, but I was correct on this. I wanted to see whether they could play in the trenches with Bama. They could.
Did. Yeah.
And I wanted to see Quinn Ewers make plays that said, yeah, this guy is legit. He did until he hurt his collarbone. So what happened down in Austin?
It might be the only pick that I got right for the week. Was that
that's right? That was the fact, and I made fun of you.
I know. Yeah. Pick the Longhorns. I obviously didn't think. Remember, I was saying that I was just hoping for a backdoor cover. I was hoping for a backdoor cover.
Push.
What happened is
backdoor push.
Yes, I was praying for a backdoor push. Instead, what happens? They almost won the game. They probably should have won the game. They outplayed Alabama in a lot of ways. They dropped an interception. They dropped a touchdown. They missed a field goal. It was tipped. And they settled for 3 field goals in the red zone. I think they had 5 trips or 6 trips in the red zone and got 16 points. 19 points. They in a lot of ways should have won the football game and outplayed Alabama. And gosh, do not think that the fans didn't have some impact. It was incredible environment. It was awesome. Their students lined up the day before. I saw them on the lawn. There was a few dozen of them lined up Friday night waiting. They let them in like at 5:30 or 6 a.m. into the stadium. The student section was packed. At kickoff at 11 a.m. local time, it was jam-packed, incredibly loud, just a like terrific environment. And yes, it was brutally, brutally hot. Even in the press box that was allegedly air conditioned, it felt like it was 80, 82 degrees or so. The heat was just pulsating through the windows. But it was fun. It was electric. And give, you know, Alabama credit and Bryce Young. That's why I guess he won a Heisman Trophy winner. You know, he took the game over late like great players do, willed his team to win. And afterward, couldn't explain it. We had a bunch of exchanges with Nick Saban and Bryce Young in the post game about like, how are you able to do this? You know, and he's just he's incredibly talented, prepared, and instinctive in a big test. I don't know how to think of this game. I don't know if it was, ooh, Texas is a 9 or 10 win team kind of thing. Like they're back to being legitimate. Or is this Alabama maybe being a 9 or 10 win team and not the 12 or 13 win team? I don't know.
Yeah, we won't know that for a while. But I will say, I thought, and we'll have to let the cake bake here a little bit, but I thought Texas showed some real signs of improvement. And we'll see how long Ewers is out. It's going to be multiple weeks, apparently, which is unfortunate. But I liked what he showed. I liked their receivers. Bijan Robinson, we know he's good. And yes, they could hang in the trenches well enough, which I think is a problem for Alabama. Here's your overreaction Sunday. I think Alabama showed some real problems. real problems. This looked like the same Alabama team that barely skeeched by Auburn. They were bad offensively at the line. They couldn't make enough plays until Bryce Young just said, okay, get on my back, I'll do it. Okay, with the game on the line, fine. I will make all the plays. Just
that
come
play
with
where he ducked Ryan Watts, I think it was, the defensive. I mean, that
was incredible.
The blitz by Watts had him.
Yeah.
And he ducked it. And that was that, incredible. He won him that game.
That was the squat heard around college football. It was amazing how he squatted all the way down. That was one of the plays I asked him, like, could you take us through that? And he's like, no, I can't. I don't know what happened. I'm like, okay, all right, whatever.
athletic genius, man. It just happens, you know. But the two things, look, sloppy, 15 penalties, the most for a Saban team at Alabama, 15 penalties in this situation. And here's the bigger stat. Here's my stat of the week. Through two games, Alabama has zero takeaways on defense. The last time that's happened, I don't know, and I spent an hour and a half looking it up. I got back to 1979 looking at the first two games of every season. They've always taken the ball away. And they can't do it. They're not, I mean, they're getting nothing done. Their defense are not, you know, giving up a ton of big stuff, but they're not creating turnovers. They're not creating short fields. Will Anderson's making as many bad plays as he is good plays.
Yeah, he had a rough game.
I mean, that's been shocking to me, as he just has not played like the guy that was just a dominating force that we saw last year. So they got to get their minds right. I think they look very much like the team that barely staggered into the playoff last year. And then, okay, or barely staggered into the SEC championship game, I should say, and then got it together. But I am very unimpressed with Alabama right now.
Will Anderson, I think he came up four times in the game. That's it. Four times, and two times is because he got a penalty thrown on him. So he had basically two plays that you kind of noticed him. And so that was kind of a theme in the post game too. And Will did come out and we talked to him, and he said things like, you know, it was the loudest, craziest environment he'd ever played in his college career, and you could tell it had an impact on him.
I can only imagine this week at practice at Alabama, Ooh. And we can send our condolences and flowers
to
Monroe. Poor Monroe.
Yes.
Like, you're going to catch that whooping anyway, but oh, no.
Yeah.
They survived. It was interesting because I was like, man, if Texas wins this game, this whole season becomes a lot more interesting in the chase for the playoff.
Sure does.
Like Bama on the brink.
Yeah, on the brink early. Really changes things. That doesn't happen.
Mm-mm. No, but they survived and won. And, the receivers, I mean, there's a lot there. You're like, where's the play?
Mm, yeah.
Where's the play? And it doesn't happen. And Bryce Young does it. But, yeah, we'll see. Not what they were looking for, but they won. And that, as we just went through, about five teams that would gladly take a one-point victory.
Yeah, for sure.
The great coaches win the games.
Yeah.
You mentioned practice this week at Alabama and prayers for everybody involved. One of the first things Nick Saban said in the post game when he sat down was, I just told the team that when you practice hard, the games are easier. If you don't practice hard, the games are hard. And so I think it was a signal like, get ready, boys.
Yeah. We're going to kick ass all week.
This is not going to be fun at all. All right. There was so much, so we can't get to everything. But what we do every week, we don't wait to the end of the year to give out the Heisman Trophy. We prefer the small sample Heisman. Who won your Heisman Trophy this week? Pat?
All right, I'm going my small sample Heisman. One of the better games that we didn't really get a chance to talk about was Tennessee at Pittsburgh.
Mm, yep, great one.
Panthers coming in hot after the big backyard brawl win. Tennessee was fortunate. Keaton Slovis got injured, as he often does. And then their backup, Nick Patty, got torqued around really badly and had to play limping the rest of the way. They get it into overtime, but the guy that won the game, I think, for Tennessee, just played great, really, the whole game, particularly in some big spots. Cedric Tillman, their star wide receiver, fifth-year guy, had a great career there. 9 catches, 162 yards, and a touchdown. And I believe he had the winning score in overtime. I will double-check that. But Cedric Tillman, small sample Heisman for me.
All right. Ross, get a small sample.
Can we give a small sample Heisman to an entire unit? And if we can, Kentucky's defense. The Cats went down to Gainesville, beat Florida. I think it's the second time they beat Florida, right, in a row, and first time that that's happened since the 70s, the 1970s. Just huge for Mark Stoops and them. I mean, they just swallowed the Florida offense. The same Florida offense that looked pretty dang good a week ago against what usually is a pretty good Utah defense. And Anthony Richardson, who was, I think everybody would have said small sample Heisman last week, just had a disaster of a game. And credit the Kentucky defense. J.J. Weaver, linebacker Kentucky, had 9 tackles. Jordan Wright, another linebacker at Kentucky, had a sack, 6 tackles. They played incredible. And give it to that unit for just kind of going in there and swallowing the Gators. Kentucky's real yet again. Football school.
Jordan Wright's eligibility was restored at a fortuitous time after missing the opener.
Yes.
All right, my small sample Heisman goes out to Provo, Utah. Fantastic game between Baylor and BYU. BYU wins 26-20 in overtime. We were not pleased with the overtime. If someone could just make a field goal,
oh my God,
the game would have ended and Baylor would have covered.
Yes,
but instead we got
for
go
all
to
of us who picked Baylor, which I think was everyone.
Everyone picked Baylor, and BYU ends up winning it. But I'm going to give it to Chase Roberts. 8 receptions, 122 yards, and a touchdown. He also played quarterback one time, threw 1 pass for 22 yards and a touchdown. Very creative game plan. Really good effort by BYU. That's a big win to beat Baylor. That's a really big win. Sets the tone going into the Big 12. Says a lot about this season. Jaron Hall was very good. The whole BYU team was good. The environment up at BYU was incredible. Great night for BYU football to be the top 10 team at home in Baylor. And so my small sample Heisman goes to Chase Roberts on behalf of the entire Cougar program. Got to be feeling pretty good. All right. By the nature of this podcast, we're normally very mean people, at least Pat and I. And we focus all on the negative pretty much. So the question is, can we say something nice? We try to say something nice every week because, you know, we got heart, maybe.
Maybe. Occasionally.
Ross, can you say anything nice? Can we at least count on you to say something nice here?
Why me? Always me, huh? Come to me. I have to be the nice guy.
I'll start with you, yeah.
I have to be the nice guy. The good cop. The good cop. All right. We crushed, in a way, Clemson last week. And we crushed their quarterback, DJ. And they came out, okay, it was against Furman. But DJ looked good. He looked smooth. And we were ready to replace DJ last week with Klubnik. And he came in against Furman, went 1 for 4 for -2 yards. And DJ was 21 for 27, 231 yards, 2 TDs and INT. So maybe let's say something nice about DJ, and maybe he will remain Clemson's starting quarterback. We'll see. That's my nice.
Good point. Good point. Leave it to Dabo to unspring our good quarterback controversy. We were hoping for content with that, but you know. All right. I'm going to say something nice about Oregon State and Jonathan Smith, coach there. Bring your own guts, baby. They are down 3. They have time for 1 play left against Fresno State. They're on the Fresno 2-yard line. Most people are going to kick the thing and go to overtime, see if they can pull it out there. Oh, no. Not our man, Jonathan Smith. He says, we're going for it. And not only are they going for it, I love this. They go Wildcat, and their Wildcat quarterback, this guy named Jack Coletto, came to Oregon State as a QB, then played running back, tight end, linebacker, does like everything. He mostly now is a linebacker. He's had 5, 6 tackles on the season, but he's also run for 3 touchdowns. He's their short yardage dude. And he carries it in for the winning score on the last play, do or die. Walk off winner, walk off loser. Either way, that's what was happening. Jack Coletto gets it in. Jonathan Smith with the guts play, and Oregon State is 2-0.
I am going to say something nice about the Kansas Jayhawks, who I have said more mean things to. How mean? I for a long time, spread rumors that the existence of an actual football stadium in Lawrence, Kansas, is a hoax. It's a hoax. It's like the moon landing. There is no football stadium there. But maybe there is, although Saturday's game took place in Morgantown, West Virginia. And so I'm giving the Heisman to Kobe Bryant, the defensive back. Kansas, they go tie. They go to overtime. Kansas scores on the first OT, their first possession. West Virginia, JT Daniels drops back. They're trying to tie the game, throws it. Kobe Bryant intercepts it. He could just drop the ball. The game is over. The game is over. It's actually more risky to keep running. Hell no. You're the damn Jayhawks. You go 86 yards to the house. They go 86 yards on the overtime possession to win by 13, 55-42. He's waving to the West Virginia fans as he enters the end zone. Kobe Bryant. What a name. We have another Kobe Bryant in college football.
The unheard of swagger from Kansas. Like Kansas with swagger. Absolutely. Unbelievable.
We're going to taunt you. This is the win totals since 2010 for Kansas football. 3-2-1, 3-3-0, 2-1, 3-3-0-2. What is that?
Three and nine is a big season.
Got bounced out of there.
Yeah.
Why? They have never won in that entire time. They've never won more than one conference game. The Jayhawks are 2-0 under Lance Leopold. They are 1-0 in the Big 12. They are taunting the Mountaineers.
Top of the league, baby.
They are running up the score in overtime. Dare I say, unsportsmanlike.
Yeah.
You know there's some crusty old West Virginia. Don't play the right way. Why you take a knee? You don't got to run it up. Hell yeah, you do. We're Kansas, baby.
We rarely get to score. Oh, let's see. You know, as good as that was for Kansas, it was equally bad for Neil Brown.
Ooh, yeah. You're looking for a football stadium. You say there's not one in Lawrence. I don't know that there's one anymore in Morgantown either. They may have torn it down. Yeah.
They're going to tear it. They're going to sell it for parts and expand that little train. That little train. No more stops at the stadium until we get good. The little train. Kansas should have put their whole team on one little train. Just ridden the thing all night. Singing the Kansas fight song, if they even have one. They got to call Bill Self and say, can we borrow the fight song? We ain't allowed to sing it for the last.
We don't know the words.
Turner Gill got here. We don't know the words. You know it? Yeah, we know it. We sang it all night when we win the titles. That's something nice. Take it all back, Kansas. All right, that's our pod. We'll be back. Should be sometime Tuesday night. We will preview week 3 and whatever else happens. Maybe no coaches get fired between now and then. Mm. A lot happened, though. Fun weekend of football. People are not really that good of a – two things happen on this weekend that always happen. Not looking like a great slate of football, and people going, the UFC card doesn't look that good. I don't think it's going to be a good card. And both deliver. Uh-huh. Anytime you hear that, it's like, it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
All sorts. You're like, yeah, the whole country's glued to Marshall, Notre Dame.
Right.
NBC got their rating on that for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
Woo. But we'll be back this week. Continue to share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. And leave us nice reviews. We appreciate you all. Talk to you later.